Welcome. The content on this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from several different sources. I'm going to start with an article from AARP, the magazine, and let's start with Sharing the Love. Happy 80th birthday to the iconic artist. Cher turned 80 on March 20th, but really Cher is ageless. She's a singer with hit songs across decades, an Oscar-winning actor, and a fashion trailblazer who has adapted to the times. We ask for insights from someone who has worked to understand Cher from the inside out. Chicago-based vocalist Lisa McLowry, 57, tours the country portraying the singer in The Beat Goes On, a Cher theatrical concert experience. Her take, Cher has never stayed in one lane. She's gone from folk to pop to rock to disco to ballads. She delivers lyrics in a way that feels conversational, almost confessional. She doesn't soften her edges to be palatable, and that authenticity creates trust. I believe her, whether she's singing about heartbreak or resilience or joy. And that little section was by Sean Piccoli. Now, under the heading of Upfront Listen, music formats over time. Let's see how many of these we remember. How we listen just keeps changing. Vinyl records. At 78 RPM, then later at 33 and a third and 45 RPM, have been popular since the early 20th century. Current state? Still popular. The Recording Industry Association of America calculates that 44 million vinyl albums were sold in 2024. Reel-to-reel tapes, developed in the 1940s. This delicate format, played on bulky machines, later became available for home use. Columbia House subscribers may recall that only select releases were on reel-to-reel. Current state, the format was thought extinct, but reemerged last fall with re-release classic titles by Yes and T-Rex. Eight tracks. In the mid-60s, these tapes brought album listening to cars. There were home players as well. But there was a big ka-chunk sound when the player needed to switch channels, sometimes even mid-song. Current state, this is the stuff of hobbyists today. Cassettes. Introduced in 1963, these were mini reel-to-reel tapes in a handy format. They were wildly adaptable. You could listen at home, in cars, or on the go through boomboxes and portable players like the Sony Walkman. Current state, many artists still release albums on cassette as a low-cost way for fans to own a physical product. Compact discs. Introduced by Philips and Sony in 1982, CDs exploded in popularity in the late 80s and early 90s, as many music fans dumped their vinyl and cassette collections and repurchased albums on this modern format that utilized lasers. Current state? CDs are not as popular as they once were, but they remain a mainstay format. The RIAA says 33 million units were sold in 2024. MP3s. The digital download format began to gain favor in the late 90s. Apple's iPod, introduced in 2001, became a ubiquitous piece of hardware, promising the ability to carry your music collection in your pocket. And a short time later, the iTunes download store allowed fans to purchase individual tracks off albums. The current state? Digital download services remain, but dedicated MP3 players have been mostly replaced by smartphones. Streaming. By the 2010s, streaming services led by Spotify offered users the ability to play music on devices without needing to download tracks. This gave fans instant access to millions of songs for a subscription fee, or for free with ads. Current state? By 2015, streaming became the top source of revenue for the U.S. music industry. It continues as the leading format according to Luminate, which tracks music consumption. And finally, recently a new kind of vinyl record was introduced. Tiny vinyls are 4-inch records that hold one song up to 4 minutes long per side. They play at 33 and a third RPMs on most standard record players. For older Americans, yet another music format probably doesn't hold much appeal. We've invested in so many others already. Let's take a walk down memory lane, which brought us to the vinyl records, the reel-to-reel, the 8-tracks, the cassettes, the compact discs, the MP3s, streaming, and there you have it. Now, I want to go back to the article in an AARP magazine, Motivation Secrets to Get You Moving Again, and we're up to number 3. Don't just exercise, become an exerciser. Research shows that our habits, the healthy or unhealthy choices we make daily, determine who we think we are. Folks who linked their habits to their identities the most had higher self-esteem and were striving toward an ideal self, according to a Frontiers in Psychology study. Put simply, positive habits can lead to a more positive identity. Take the example of my patient, Randy. She's a 50-something mother of 3 daughters who came to see me some time back with an ankle fracture. Randy was like many people. She had been a busy mom for a long time, had no exercise routine, and was overweight. All of these factors can increase your risk of bone loss and fracture. But for Randy, the fractured ankle was the final straw. She was in pain, tired of how she felt, tired of the lifestyle she was living, all of it. Now, a lot of people are tired of how they're living and how they look and feel, but Randy decided to do something about it. As her ankle healed, she improved her diet and started working around the injury. Once she was back on her feet, she made exercise part of her daily life, both cardio and strength training. A year later, she had lost 75 pounds and was running 10Ks with 2 of her daughters. Randy had hit an emotional raw point, anger and sadness at her state of health. And she decided, I'm doing this. This isn't a quick fix. This is the new one, the new me. Everyone knows a Randy, a person who has transformed their life, lost a lot of weight, or made permanent lifestyle changes, or achieved some impressive fitness goal. And not only did they do it, but they kept on doing it. And of course, everyone knows someone, or a lot of someones, who gave it a shot, made it work for a while, but ultimately couldn't push through and wound up backsliding into the old ways. What's the difference between someone who breaks through and someone who doesn't? A person who applies all the knowledge and resources and does the necessary work to change his or her life has decided, this isn't a quick fix. This is the new me. That simple change can work wonders. It's the difference between I'm going to start running and I'm becoming a runner. It's the difference between I'm going to the gym every day and I'm a daily gym goer. Don't think of movement as something you do. Think of it as part of who you are. And a little sidebar here gives us some hints. A beginner's guide to beginning in 6 easy steps. First, set a goal. Almost every patient I see who stopped exercising needs to establish some kind of goal to help get them back in the game. Sometimes it's healing or rehab-based. Sometimes it's a get-better-than-you-were-before-your-injury goal. 2. Make it a little scary. The goal can be big or small, but it should really intimidate you a bit. It should be achievable but require real work and not be something you can roll out of bed and accomplish. 3. Set a realistic but firm time frame. Tie a question to the time frame. How much better will I feel in a month, 3 months, 6 months? When the time is up, ask yourself a new question. 4. Set a realistic but firm plan. The easy part is saying half an hour a day of 3 times a week, But it's surprising how easily we break vague promises to ourselves. I find people get better results by formalizing an activity. Monday morning muscle workout or long walk Wednesday lets you reset your mind and your calendar so you look forward to each activity. If possible, create or join a community that has a similar goal. This could be as simple as getting your family or a friend to help you stick to your commitment. And finally, launch. Day one will feel really good. Your goal is to keep that feeling going long term. So treat every day as a new day one. As of today, you're a completely new person, a person who goes out and exercises. And that brings us to motivation secret number four. Build community. Years ago, I began teaching free total body functioning training classes on the weekends to help my patients and local athletes. I recognized that it was much more fun to do this kind of training in a group, so why not create one? Then a funny thing happened. As time went by, the free community classes called Iron Strength got bigger. 20 people became 30 and so on. Soon, I would regularly see 100 or more people at my outdoor Central Park classes. I was witnessing community-based motivation in action. People saw, people were intrigued, people joined, people changed. Acceptance into a group is a powerful fuel for self-efficacy. A fancy word for I think I can. Supportive people can build your belief that you can get things done. In my experience, the size of the community doesn't really matter. And simply being part of a group can have positive health benefits beyond the motivation to exercise. A large-scale review in PLOS Medicine examined 148 studies of 309,000 people with an average age of 64 and found that having strong social connections increased the odds of survival by 50% compared with those who have weaker social bonds. The results remained consistent over age, gender, health status, length of follow-up period, and cause of death. Online, or IRL, I bet you already have an idea where you can find some people to join up with. Local facilities? Look for firehouses, libraries, community centers, and parks that host exercise classes, sports leagues, and outdoor activities, often for free. Personal referrals. Someone you know knows about a group of folks doing something cool. They can arrange an invitation for you. Social media, family, friends, and online groups all like to post about their fitness adventures, including sweaty post-workout photos. Engaging can be as simple as leaving a comment like, "Wow, this looks great. I'd love to join something like this." Or you could start your own. And there's a little box here that says one time per week, strength training just once a week, doing single sets of six different exercises brought 30 to 50% gains in strength. This article was by Dr. Jordan D. Metzi, who is a sports medicine physician at the Hospital for Special Surgery. The article is adapted from PUSH, Unlock the Science of Fitness, Motivation to Embrace Health and Longevity. And this next article is an AARP book excerpt. I want to believe. After being diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer, I was determined to resist the seductive cells of the peddlers of the unproven, but still got suckered into magical cures. And this is by Annabelle Gurwitch. In the summer of 2020, I mentioned having a cough while getting a COVID test, and the doctor suggested a chest x-ray, just to be sure. I was sure this was like a cosmetic counter upsell. You walk in for a mascara and walk out with a pricey night cream. But the doctor was persistent and kind of adorable in his early 40s with twinkly eyes, tousled hair, and a warm way. I was 58. Maybe he had a thing for older women? The random encounter led to a diagnosis of stage 4 lung cancer, typically a terminal illness. I had navigated a 30-year career as an actor, seven of those as the co-host of dinner and a movie on TBS. I had been a tireless community volunteer, published 5 books, including a New York Times bestseller, and twice been a finalist for the Thurber Prize for American Humor. I had raised a well-adjusted son in Hollywood, maybe the most challenging enterprise of all. And I had accomplished all of these feats with my sense of humor intact. Now I faced my Waterloo. Then, through the miracle of modern science, I was fortunate to have access to cutting-edge therapies. I was granted a temporary reprieve and have now enjoyed 5 years of stable health. Over that time, I set out to rekindle my joie de vivre and, as is my way, turn that journey into a book. The End of My Life is Killing Me is about my adventures as a terminal patient, including selling merch for a heavy metal band on a European van tour, befriending an angel, and, as excerpt in parts below, finding myself in the center of the wellness universe. It was a temperate 72 degrees. The sun lit up the Pacific Ocean in glittery flashes, and cotton candy clouds puffed across a perfect blue sky as I chugged north on a highway that clings to the edge of the continent. I clocked signs for the Malibu Wellness Expert, Daily Calm Wellness, The Wellness Club, White Chakra, All's Well That Ends Well Wellness, I might have made that one up, Iyashi Wellness, Plant Wellness, Wellness. I definitely made that one up. And then my destination, the Quantum 360 Wellness Center. A receptionist ushered me through a spacious room finished with 2 banks of black leather Lazy Boy recliners overlooking the kind of panoramic ocean view normally reserved for film studio heads and the surviving members of the Beach Boys. Clients were chillaxing in their chairs, each holding an electronic gadget resembling a light bright, the classic 1970 kids' toy. One had a green drink in hand. The receptionist and I made our way to a glass cubicle for my intake consultation with the proprietor of Q360. I listened intently as he explained how he could harness the quantum field's regenerative properties and reinstate the optimal blueprint of my biofield. The apparatuses at the club use cutting-edge technology calibrated to repair damaged DNA through tuning into the 520 Hz frequency, sometimes referred to as the universal healing tone. Also available for sale were grounding bags of Tesla crystals, purportedly charged with electromagnetic frequencies that provide protection from 5G radiation and, yes, named for the inventor, Nikola Tesla. The proprietor didn't have a degree in physics, but he did have a jawline you could cut yourself on, along with piercing blue eyes almost identical to the cerulean blue of the Pacific. I dutifully listened and diligently scribbled notes, something that sounds like interconnectedness, resonant frequencies, or did he say resurrection infrequently? 2 thoughts occurred simultaneously. There are worse places you could find yourself on a Wednesday morning, and it's possible that the person sitting opposite you is genuinely convinced of the credibility of what he's peddling. Because people subscribe to the flat earth theory. Don't ask if he's a flat earther or about the activated crystal on his desk, also available for a princely sum. You don't want to know the answer. I was in Malibu because a friend had texted that she knew, quote, a guy with an energy machine, and he's had great results in curing diseases in his garage in Topanga. Topanga Canyon is one of the few remaining hippie enclaves in Southern California, a tangle of dirt roads and dusty hiking paths where Native American dream catchers hanging from rearview mirrors are commonplace as writers tapping out screenplays in West Hollywood cafes. When I didn't respond to her initial text, she pinged me a few months later to ask if I had connected with Topanga guy. By then, I had forgotten the context and, being single, thought she was referring to a possible date. I wouldn't want to dare that guy with an energy machine in his garage, I wouldn't want to date that guy with energy machine in his garage, so why would I entrust this dude with my life? Was what I wanted to text. But I was worn down by the crush of recommendations I had received. My residency in Cancerland had given me an unwelcome wagon gift, an ever-present nagging suspicion that if I didn't at least try the outlandish cure, I wasn't doing everything I could. When I called to schedule, I learned that Topanga Guy had recently married one of Charlene Sheen's ex-wives and upgraded from his garage to a swank, Herman Miller-bedecked office suite. I want to believe, that was one tagline for the TV series The X-Files, and I wanted to believe that the proprietor was the self-taught scientific savant he claimed to be, and that this resonant light therapy might be something more than colorful kids' play. But when the owner of the Q360 Wellness Center trained his baby blues on me on that sunny afternoon in Malibu and said, "Diseases are caused by negative thinking. Your lung cancer indicates that you're harboring toxic levels of grief," I stood up, shaken out of my intimidating language stupor, and said, "No, that's not true." Although I was experiencing grief, the grief of knowing that I could never get back the time or the $360 I had paid for the consultation. I marched out on wobbly legs. My body carried me, but my brain was still bargaining. Should I stay and try it out just to be able to disprove it myself? Or, you know, just in case, wasn't Viagra originally indicated for heart disease? My friend's recommendation was just one in a pot of magical thinking, ancient rituals, and speculative remedies that came my way. Like juicing. If you care anything at all about your health, they say, you need to start juicing. Juicing is the gateway to wellness woo-woo. Juice alkylates claim benefits ranging from improved IQ to increased longevity. Its anti-cancer properties are so often touted that when I wrote the New York Times that I had been given a juicer as a present after being diagnosed, dozens of readers sent photos of abandoned juicers they had also received. So when my juicer arrived, I hastily unboxed it. It was a super sleek model, almost sculptural. I considered the steps I would have to take to make juice. I would need vegetables on hand. This was during a COVID lockdown and wasn't doing much shopping, not to mention that the vegetables considered the most potent elixirs are best ordered in a farm delivery box, which sounded expensive. Also, anxiety making, what to get and how much of it, and I would have to take a nap after making my morning coffee, then make the juice, and then I would need another nap after the exertion of making the juice. I give up, I sighed after my son Ezra got a job at a popular local juice bar. Was the universe trying to tell me something? I slunk into the joint. What's your most nutritious green juice? Should I have the Zeus with ginger and watercress? Or Eternal Life with turmeric and Himalayan Silajit? He didn't hesitate. Eternal Life sucks, Mom. You don't want that. Here's what you want, a Greek coffee. It's got dates, bananas, cold-pressed coffee, figs, cardamom, and cacao. I don't know if a Greek coffee is healthy by any measurable standard, and it doesn't cure worms in canines or humans. But that combination of ingredients makes me glowy, gives me sugar and caffeine-powered energy, and it tastes even better when someone else makes it for me, especially my son. Still, if you ever hear that I've hung a shingle for Annabelle's Greek coffee cure with turmeric or find yourself in some sun-splashed Malibu office and notice I'm one of the clients receiving realigning resonant rays of light, please don't be surprised or disappointed. I still haven't cycled through a dozen lines of alternative treatments, and I don't know what lengths I'll go to when that day comes. Also, can I interest you in a juicer? never used, nearly new. I've got big medical bills, so I'm letting it go for a good price. I'll let you have it for a cool million. And this was adapted from The End of My Life is Killing Me, The Unexpected Joys of a Cancer Slacker by Annabelle Gurwitch, and it was published by Zibby Publishing on March 7th of this year. Well, I think we have time for a look at a real person. He goes with the flow, rolling down the river. How Cisco Guevara turned a youthful mistake into a 50-year calling. My path to a life on the Rio Grande began when I stole a police car. We were 8 teenagers packed into a VW Bug, and we had spent the day on the river drinking beer. The cops pulled us over. When the driver resisted arrest, they wrestled him to the ground. Another cop pulled up. He left his door open and the engine running. They weren't paying attention to me, so I got in and hit the gas. The police chased me, but they didn't catch me. I parked the cruiser at the police station and fled to Colorado. Within about a year, though, I knew I had made a horrible mess of my life. I hitchhiked back home and turned myself in. I had planned to follow in my father's footsteps and work as a scientist at Los Alamos National Laboratory, but with my record, that path was not an option. After I served my sentence, I was hired by the state's first commercial rafting company. In 1978, I took over the business and named it Los Rios River Runners. Running a whitewater rafting business in the middle of the desert during a drought has its challenges. To survive, we've expanded our offerings to include native culture events, music, and yoga workshops. That healing energy is still there, even when the water is low. There's no deeper connection than what I have to this river. The river we're floating on feeds our crops. It's the water we drink. It's our being, our substance, our energy, our soul. I'm a founding member of a nonprofit group that fights to keep the river clean and holds polluters accountable. Many of our river guides have worked for me for 35 years. I've seen many marriages and a whole batch of kids, and we have several second-generation guides. I've learned to trust and empower my employees. Everything is in waves. Water comes in waves. Light comes in waves. Energy comes in waves. Your life is a series of waves, up and down, up and down. You're here now, but in a little while, you're going to be someplace else. Well, folks, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure and listen at the same time next week. I do hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.